Worse than a slaughterhouse, that's how the UN chief Ban Ki-moon has lately described the situation in Syria's besieged city of Aleppo. This comes after Syrian government forces, backed by Russian air power, launched a major offensive on a rebel-held district of Aleppo this week. In just 5 days, the attack knocked out two more hospitals and killed scores of people, including, according to some counts, over 90 children. Amma Salmo is a spokesperson for the volunteer group of first responders there in Syria, known as the White Helmets, and he spoke to me earlier this week about the desperate situation inside Aleppo.
The situation right now, and Aleppo under the siege, no medical, no food, no fuel even. We haven't even right now the fuel. It is like a hell. It is like a doomsday right now in Aleppo. The street is empty. The people under the rubble. Right now, I want to send a message to the people of the world and the politicians. Make something to stop the shelling, to stop the killing of the people.
That's Amma Salmo, a spokesperson for the White Helmets, working on the ground in Aleppo. Well, the US has now threatened to end all cooperation with Russia unless Moscow and Damascus stop bombing Aleppo. Following this from London is Alexander Nekrasov. He's a former Kremlin advisor. And we're also joined by Randa Sleem, who heads the Initiative for Track 2 Dialogues at the Middle East Institute in Washington, D.C. Alexander Nekrasov and Randa Sleem, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Randa, let me start with you. When the Obama administration, when John Kerry says to Sergei Lavrov, for instance, well, you know, you better stop this or we'll end all talks, what then? How much of a threat is that?
Well, the Obama administration has pushed itself into this hole, if we can put it this way, by so far opting not to engage in any kind of military action to increase the cost for Russia for its intervention in support of the Assad regime. There is not much leverage at this point except to basically shame Russia to agree to respect the cessation of hostility agreement, which was struck early this month. So at this point, we are in a holding pattern. Secretary of State Kerry spoke today with Russian Minister Lavrov. They threatened to suspend the talks, but they have not made the announcement yet. I think awaiting some more decisions from Moscow to see if Russia and its president are willing to exert the pressure needed on the Syrian regime to stop the attacks on the civilians in Aleppo.
Alexander, maybe we should just take a step back. Since the ceasefire broke down almost a week ago, we've seen the city of Aleppo subjected to some of the worst bombardment of the war. Why is Russia doing this? And why is it sort of risking, as Randa used the terms there, the sort of the respect of its alleged partners in the ceasefire, US and the rest of the world? Why is it doing this?
Well, first of all, there is a civil war going on in Syria. The ceasefire didn't really work right from the start. And after the bombing of Syrian troops outside Deir ez-Zor, it was clear that this ceasefire was not holding. And to say that Russia is the guilty party in a conflict which involves so many sides that people have lost count already of how many groups and countergroups are operating and how many countries outside are helping this group or other group. In this situation, I think it's practically impossible to reach any sort of agreement, especially as many of the players in this game want Assad out yesterday, which is practically, you know, makes the whole thing very practically impossible to achieve, because if you want a no government, country run by no government, and we saw that happening in Libya, we saw that happening in Iraq, and we know what happens when there is no government. It's chaos. The groups, terrorist groups, move in. They take control. They start fighting with each other. What is I can't understand is how on earth countries which were responsible for Iraq and its disintegration and for Libya and its disintegration are now trying to convince the world that they know what they are doing. This just doesn't work in the real world. This is nonsense. So I personally think that until Obama and his administration are in Washington, nothing will be achieved at all.
So you say we know what happens when there's no government, it's chaos. The truth is it's chaos in Syria and has been for 5 years. And for most of those 5 years, the global community, I suppose as represented there in the UN, has been saying the answer in Syria is a political solution, not a military solution. And yet we are further away from that than ever before. Alexandra, I'll come to you on this and then Randa. So to follow up what you're saying, I mean, coming in and assisting with bombing, more intense bombing of Aleppo, how does that help us get to a solution? If it suggests, as we know, that Russia agrees with Assad, the only solution in Syria can be Bashar al-Assad remaining in charge of a Syrian government that wins this war. Is that the only solution that Russia will accept?
No, Russia is saying that for the time being, there is nobody who can replace Assad and his government. And that is why they should stay for a while, not forever, for a while, until the terrorists are defeated. Until they are defeated, nothing will change. By the way, all this talk about the only way is a political solution, a diplomatic solution, it's just talk. It's for the UN, which has failed miserably, once again, by the way, to resolve this situation. And Ban Ki-moon, I'm sorry, but he is not the person we should listen to, because after Libya, I think Ban Ki-moon should think twice before he interferes anywhere.
Okay.
The problem is that you can't blame one country for a multi-sided conflict. And Russia is, for some unknown reason, is supposedly guilty of a war that has so many countries involved in it and groups that it is difficult to even understand how many. So until this propaganda war, which the U.S. and its allies are waging, we can't have any sort of solution, even military one.
Okay, let me bring Randa in there. That point, you can't blame one country for a multi-sided conflict, is true. I guess that's fair to say on one level, Randa. But has the US done enough to try and separate or get the rebels that they're supporting, the moderate rebels, separated from what we know are sort of terrorist groups like the al-Nusra Front?
First, let me make clear that the only two parties that have the air force right now in the skies of Aleppo are the Russians and the Syrian regime. They are the ones that are pounding the civilians with all sorts of weapons, barrel bombs and others, and causing 80 to more than, in fact, even 90% of all the death that we are seeing. And that has been the case for a while. The opposition has never had the air force to be able to tip that military equation. So let's make it clear about who's responsible for the biggest carnage right now in Syria. And it is those two parties that have the air force. And it's not those opposition groups that are sitting with some, you know, Kalashnikov or some mortars here and there. So let's be clear about that. The second part, which is political agreement, I think the peace, the COH, this agreement that was stuck early in September by Minister Lavrov and Secretary Kerry, guaranteed really almost everything that Russia needed, including an acquiescence by the Americans for Assad to stay on for a transitional period to be defined by the negotiations between the opposition and the regime. The problem so far has been the case that in order for a political solution to happen, you need negotiations to proceed between the Syrian parties. And the quandary we have is that so far, the Assad regime has not showed any seriousness to negotiate.
Okay.
So in one way, you cannot have military solution without political solution without negotiating with Assad. But at the same time, you cannot have a solution while negotiating with Assad. That's a quandary that we are. But now, I think the United States is for a transition period that keeps Assad for a while in power until the Syrian parties, including the Syrian regime, agree on a transitional authority and agree on a way out of of this crisis.
Okay, now can I ask you both, I'm afraid we've got a very short time left, only just over a minute for both of you to share the time. So when John Kerry says we're on the verge of the suspending these discussions and we're going to have to pursue other alternatives, very briefly, Randa, what would other alternatives be? A military, any kind of military strike on Assad?
Look, I would like to believe that. I don't believe that the American administration, especially Obama administration has a plan B. I think what they are doing now is to try to shame the Russians again to respect the cessation of hostilities agreement. But I don't think they are ready to up the ante in the last few weeks of the tenure of the Obama administration.
Alexander Nikrasov, very briefly, your response to that?
Well, first of all, there are U.S.-led coalition planes bombing Syria for many, many months now, so I don't understand how we can say that only Syrian and Russian.
Okay, just very briefly, though, to that point, what else?
And as for these threats that are coming from American side, well, first of all, I don't think they know what they're doing. I think that is hysterical. What they're doing is hysteria, what they're saying. All these threats mean they have no idea where to go, how to proceed.
Alexander Nikrasov and Randa Slim, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
Thank you.
Alexander Nikrasov is a former Kremlin advisor. Randa Slim heads the Initiative for Track 2 Dialogues at the Middle East Institute in Washington.